We're going to be talking about Joshua chapter 2. If you have Bibles, I want to encourage you to open them just for a minute. I'm going to be reading the entire chapter, and I want to say that this story is a story that is really familiar to almost all of us. It's the story of Rahab. And when Ken came to me a couple weeks ago and asked me if I'd be willing to do this, I thought, man, it's a story that everybody knows, and so I'm not sure if there's a lot of new information. But I need to tell you, I am probably more excited about this morning than anything I've done in a long time. And because of that, I may speak a little bit faster than I normally do, although not as fast as Dan. you know, it's one of those times when you get excited about something that you want everything to kind of slow down. So if you could pray for me this morning that things would slow down so I don't miss some things, I would very much appreciate that. But Joshua chapter 2. Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittah, or the Acacia Grove. Go look over the land, he said, especially Jericho. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab, bring out the men who came to you and entered your house because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they came from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, the men left. I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in hot pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan, and as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, I know the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you, when you came out of Egypt, and what he did to Sihon and Og. I'm just curious, how many of you know the story of Sihon and Og? Anybody here? Okay, good, just two of you. You're gonna love this story, folks, I wanna tell you, because I didn't know the story until I took a look at it. The two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is the God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I've shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. Our lives for your lives, the men assured her. If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. Now she said to them, go to the hills so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return and then go on your way. The men said to her, this oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless when we enter the land, you have tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you have brought your father and mother, your brothers and all your family into your house, if anyone goes outside your house into the street, his blood will be on his head. We will not be responsible. As for anyone who is in the house with you, his blood will be on our head if a hand is laid on him. But if you tell what we are doing, we will be released from the oath you made us swear. Agreed, she said, let it be as you say. So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. When they left, they went into the hills and stayed there 3 days until the pursuers had searched all along the road and returned without finding them. Then the two men started back. They went down out of the hills, forded the river, and came to Joshua, son of Nun, and told him everything that had happened to them. They said to Joshua, "The Lord has surely given the whole land into your hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us." Joshua chapter 2. A few weeks ago, I was flying home from Houston, Texas, where Deb and I had spent some time caring for our daughter and granddaughters because of surgery. On the flight, I decided to take a little closer look at this story and became intrigued by Rahab's testimony. You will notice from what we read that she says her willingness to entertain the spies is because of the bigness of the God of the Hebrews. And then she recounts to them the story of the Red Sea parting, which was 40 years before Joshua and over 100 miles from Jericho. And then she recounts how the Hebrews conquered Sihon and Og. And until I took a close look, I didn't realize what a big deal that was and how important it was to Rahab's story. Now, mind you, and Ken alluded to this last week, in ancient civilizations, gods were territorial. So all the people of Jericho knew was their own God of Jericho. Now, you will notice in the notes you were given that it says backstory. You need to know the backstory to Rahab's testimony, and so that's what we're going to do. So I went back when I was on the plane, and I scanned through Genesis to Deuteronomy to see what the story of Sihon and Og were. And as I did so, I found some stuff that made me sit on the edge of my seat, if you can do that in an airplane. And it gave me a different picture of how faithful and how big the God of the Hebrews was, and it gave me insight as to why the people of Jericho were utterly afraid of the God of Israel. When you read parts of Deuteronomy 2 and 3, which recounts the last 2 years of the wilderness experience, you find that when the wilderness generation dies, and I want to talk about that just for a minute, when the wilderness generation dies, God gives Moses directives about beginning the process of entering the land of Canaan. Now, I'd like to think just for a minute about the wilderness experience. 40 years from beginning to end, 38 years, Deuteronomy says 38, it took 38 years for the previous generation of people who were 20 years old and older to die off. 38 years. Now, I thought about that. When Israel left Egypt, it was probably 1.5 million people. And I figured people over 20, let's say 750,000 people died in 38 years. Now, I broke that down to a day, and somewhere around 60 people a day died over 38 years. And as I was thinking about that, I was thinking, every day it was a reminder to the nation of their rebellion. Interesting stuff to me. Every day it was a reminder of their rebellion, until the last person died in year 38. And so after that, directives are given, and probably in year 37, and I'm not going to go into great detail, but at least enough detail for you to catch a picture of this. Probably year 37, God comes to Moses, and he says, "Moses, we're done with this wilderness experience. And we're going to start moving towards the land of Canaan." And so this is what happens. And I'll stand over here because you can pick it up on the camera. Egypt's down here, and they are in a wilderness about in this area. And God says to Moses, "Okay, this is what I want you to do." And here's where it gets to be so much fun. He says, "I want you to move up into this area. I want you to go through Edom and Moab." Now, does anybody know whose descendants lived in Edom and Moab? Esau's descendants. And what God says to Moses is this: when you go through this land, I don't want you to touch them. I don't want you to go at war with them because I've given them this land. How many years before that did God give them the land? Hundreds of years before that. God is a covenant-keeping God, even with someone like Esau and his descendants. And we know Esau and Jacob weren't really good buddies all the time. And yet God says, no, it's not just Jacob who was important, but it was Esau who was important. Okay, so they go through this land, and then he says, there's the land of Ammon up here. Now, I don't want you to attack that land either. Does anybody know whose descendants lived in Ammon? Lot's descendants. And God says, I don't want you to touch the descendants of Lot because I have given them this land. Now, the land of Ammon is really an interesting place because it's where two famous cities were, Sodom and Gomorrah. And just to let you know, that probably someplace in this area, they are discovering, they think they are, in the last 10 years, they think they are discovering in some archaeological digs, the city of Sodom. And actually, some of you, and you don't realize this, but some of you have a friend who is on those archaeological digs. We have a friend. Some of you have the same friend. So anyhow, so they can't touch this land. But here's where it gets fun. So we read about Sihon and Og. So God says, in year 38, everybody's died. This is what I want you to do. The Arnon Gorge is right here. Arnon River, Arnon Gorge. What I want you to do when you go through these lands, bypass, go through this land and don't war with the people, the Arnon Gorge, what I want you to do is this. You're going to go to war with the people who are in this land. This is the king of Sihon. And his land goes from here up to this area here. And I want you to conquer the entire land. And once you get done with that, you're going to run into Og, the king of Bashan. And his land goes from here to here. So you're going to conquer this whole land. And that's what they did. It took them 2 years to do that. Now, we don't have any idea, unless I tell you, how big an area that is. Okay, and I want you to think about Rahab's story, okay? She is sitting over here in Jericho. She's sitting over here in Jericho, which is the Jordan River's right here, and Jericho's about 5 miles from the Jordan River, and when we were in Israel, we came pretty close to it. We were in the Jordan River, but not Jericho. So anyhow, I just want you to think about this in the context of her story, and I hope I can slow down to talk about it enough. If you can picture the landmass, this is the landmass. Imagine with me, please, that this is Stockton, Manteca. All right? With me so far? This is Highway 99. All right? Stockton, Manteca down here. This is Highway 99. This is Interstate 5. And this is Fresno. That's the area they conquered in 2 years. Now think about it. In Rahab's story, she goes, we're living in fear. Because the last things that had happened during the 40-year experience is this. The other cool thing is this. When you get up here to this area, which was the land of Bashan, when you look at Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 11, what you'll see is that the king, or King Og of Bashan, he was a remnant of the giants that were left in that land. And the kingdom that he overruled had about 60 cities in it. The interesting thing in Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 11 is this. He was not a small man. His bed, are you ready for this? His bed was 13 feet long and 6 feet wide. Now, unless he had a small man complex, he very well could have been the size of Goliath or bigger. very formidable enemy. So that's Sihon. This is Og. And when they get done conquering, they come back right across the river Jordan on this side, probably 3 or 4 miles on this side. This army is encamped, and the Israelite army, according to the book of Numbers, had the capability of fielding 600,000 soldiers. So again, you look at Jericho, a city of somewhere probably between 20 and 50,000 people. A huge army of almost 600, it could have been 600, let's say 400,000 people were actually enlisted, sitting 8 miles across the river. So let's think about that in our context. We're here, Highway 99, go 3 miles on the other side of Highway 99, and you have an army of 400,000 soldiers sitting there. And the other thing that's so interesting to me is this. The people in Jericho knew that God had spared these people, had defeated these people, and now they're sitting right across the river. And you got to be thinking the people of Jericho are going, oh, crud. We know what's going to happen. The other thing that strikes me is this. When they think about the God of Israel, they know that the people of Israel are a nomadic people, which means that their God is not simply a centralized, localized God, but he is bigger than localized territories. And it produces fear. So that's the backdrop. Then on your notes, it says the story. So this is the story. First of all, can I just ask, does that make sense? Do you understand the significance of Sihon and Og now? Yeah. Is it cool for anybody else besides me? I just think that is such a cool story. Man alive. I could tell it again. I told Caleb this is the shortest sermon that you'll probably hear in 2 years, so maybe I'll tell the story again to make it longer. Okay, this is a story. Joshua is now commander-in-chief. And as you remember, 40 years before this, Joshua was one of the two spies, or one of the 12 spies who went to spy out the land. He and Caleb were the only two good spies who came back. They survived the 40-year wilderness experience. He sends two spies to Jericho to spy out Jericho. And just to note, it is thought that Jericho was the oldest city in that part of the ancient world. And it may very well have had a highway that tied the north and the south together, which meant a lot of people pass through the city. So, two spies enter the city, and from my reading, it is thought that inns were located close to the city gates. And in this case, it may have been that Rahab's inn was easily accessible to the spies. And my guess is that because the people of Jericho were on high alert because of this army that was right across the river, when they saw two guys dressed differently who were dressed like Hebrews, it's like, okay, you know, let's just think about it. You know that they had spies constantly watching what was going on the other side of the river. You know that they knew how the Hebrews were dressed. So when two Hebrews come wandering into the city, they end up at Rahab's house. The king is concerned. You know, I was trying to think, what was it like for the two spies and for Rahab? I wonder what it was like when, did they knock on the door of the inn and Rahab answered the door and she saw who they were and they said, you guys got to get in here right away? Or was it the inn an open area and so they were downstairs in the open air area, and Rahab was in the balcony, and she saw them, and she immediately knew she needed to take care of them. We're not sure what it was, but I just wonder what those dynamics were like. The one thing we do know is this. They come to Rahab's house. The king immediately sends and says, we want the two spies, because we want the two Hebrews because we know they're spying on us. And then she does something incredibly courageous. At some point in time in the past before this, she had decided to believe in the Hebrew God. And in her conversation with the spies, she states, we know your God is not a territorial God, but he is a God who led you out of Egypt. You know, think about those stories. Led you out of Egypt, the 10 plagues. She had heard about the 10 plagues. Dried up the Red Sea. The Red Sea was 100 miles away. Egypt was 300 miles away. The Red Sea was 100 miles away. 40 years before that, led you in the wilderness, conquered kings. He is the God of heaven and earth. And because of her faith, she puts her life on the line with the king. And as I think about the events that led up to her decisions, I wonder what it was like in Jericho as they heard about what was happening on the other side of the Jordan River. Did their level of fear gradually increase as they heard about the victories and as the army got closer? You know, when I think about Rahab, one of the things that confounds me is, why is it that only Rahab had faith? If I would have been in Jericho and seen and experienced what had happened the previous 40 years, I just don't get it. I don't get it that why was it only Rahab? Why weren't there other people in Jericho who decided to believe? But more than once, Rahab says this. She says, we have heard of what your God has done. And as event after event piled up, I wonder if God was silently convincing Rahab of who he was. Well, we know the spies escaped. And we know the promise made to Rahab that her family would be spared if they were in her house. And her house was identified with a protective marking of a scarlet cord hanging from the wall of her house. And it seems like, doesn't it, that this parallels Passover a little bit. The blood of a lamb spares everyone in the household from destruction in the same way that a scarlet cord spares everyone from destruction. But it's even more than that. It is God taking the most unlikely and insignificant person, a prostitute, to become the only person of faith in Jericho, and to become the one who saves her family. And again, Old Testament pictures of Noah and Lot and others, the only people to save their family. And I think it reminds us of a New Testament person named Jesus, the only one who can save us. And we know how the story ends. When the walls come down, Joshua keeps his promise, and Rahab and her family are spared. And not only spared, but Rahab's reputation is solidified in history because of faith. According to the genealogy in Matthew, Rahab's name is there. The lineage of Jesus runs through that genealogy. Hebrews 11 singles her out as an example of faith. James chapter 2, verse 25, depicts her action of faith as something to be honored. This act of courage was not forgotten. Extra biblical, and this is fun, there's extra biblical commentary about Rahab. And here's some of it. In the Jewish Midrash, which is a type of Jewish commentary, and you're going to love this. Rahab is named as one of the four most beautiful women the world has ever known. The other three names are Sarah, Abigail, and Esther. In the Babylonian Talmud, anyone who, and this is kind of interesting, anyone who mentions Rahab's name immediately lusts after her. And also the rabbis viewed Rahab as a worthy convert to Judaism, and they believed that Rahab married Joshua and had many descendants, although there's no proof of that. But the point is this, she has definitely left her mark. So what are some of our takeaways? The first is this. Can I ask, how does faith practically function in your life? Is your God a territorial God? And by that I mean, are there only certain areas in your life which you have committed to faith, with other areas you are still trusting in yourself? Or is your testimony the same as Rahab's, where in every area of life you are trusting in the God of heaven and earth? Is your God territorial?